Husker Doc Talk Podcast number 17. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. This podcast presented by our good friends at the Remington Trophy. Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 17th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. We'll have more information on that coming up a little bit later in this podcast. But now we are joined by the doctor himself. He's making a house call. Rob, last week, and I'm talking about Dr. Rob Zadiska. Rob, last week we had a record number of listens because Nebraska got beat at Wisconsin. Not only got beat, got blown out. And they returned home for senior day to play Minnesota. And wouldn't you know, it happens again. Nebraska loses to Minnesota. The first time they've lost to the Gophers at home since 1960.
And that is 2 years in a row.
It's 2 years in a row they've lost to the Gophers. Following Facebook, following Twitter, sure, there's some people that are upset. But I've got to be honest with you. On my timelines, the anger wasn't there. It's almost like people have thrown up their hands and said, shit, I give up.
I don't know if it's a I give up kind of thing, but it's almost sort of this thing where it seems like the fans kind of saw this coming. You saw that game last week. You saw what Minnesota did against Ohio State. Minnesota played very well against a very good Ohio State team. Took them deep into the fourth quarter. I mean, lost by a touchdown, but I mean, they put points up. They kind of held Ohio State in check to a fair degree. And I think people were really expecting a good Minnesota team to come into Lincoln. I don't think people were that surprised by this.
Is it because they weren't surprised because Minnesota is a good team, and you pointed out that Minnesota is very similar to what Wisconsin is, or are they not surprised because it's the end of the year, and in crunch time, Bo Pelini and his staff can't deliver?
Well, he's had some good finishes to seasons in the past. I don't think it's one of these things where Nebraska crumps at the end of the year every year. It's more of a situation where when you look at the teams that have given Nebraska trouble, especially this year, well, even going into last year, it's teams that run a ground-based, time-controlled, power running attack offense, a pro-style passing offense, and a good, well-disciplined defense. And that's what Nebraska's seen 2 weeks in a row. Now, Wisconsin, I think, has better athletes across the board than Minnesota does. But this was a matchup. Especially after that Wisconsin game, I'm looking at Minnesota just going, wow, this is not a good matchup for what Nebraska's coaching staff usually puts together.
Now, Rob, you're putting maybe a softer touch on this week than you were a week ago. Why is that? You seemed a little more upset a week ago.
This did not surprise me. I went into this game thinking, you know what? Minnesota's going to come in here and they're going to run a 3-yard running play, a 3-yard running play, and then a bootleg out to the tight end. Quarterback might run. You can take that formula, just running play, bootleg where the quarterback might just take it and run himself. Hit the repeat button about 5 dozen times, and that was the game yesterday. That was Minnesota's offense. You knew that coming in. You knew that's what they were going to do. And you saw Nebraska coming out doing what they normally do and not making adjustments for that. You knew they were going to do it. And that's the thing. It's not that I'm not upset about it. It's just that there was such a zero lack of surprise here. That's the thing that kills me. This was what Minnesota was going to do to Nebraska last week. Nebraska's defense was probably going to live on the field for a big chunk of the game. That's what Minnesota's done to people week in and week out. You knew by the end of the game they were going to be tired. That's what Minnesota does to people. You knew at the end of the game Nebraska's defense was going to have a hard time stopping Minnesota. because they were tired and exhausted. You look at the time of possession, Minnesota had a 10-minute advantage in time of possession. That's huge.
You mean Minnesota did what to Nebraska, what Nebraska used to do to teams, and that was pound it right at them. You knew what it was coming, and there was nothing you could do to stop it. Nebraska knew what was coming, Rob. They could do nothing to stop it.
This might have been a simpler offense than what Nebraska saw against Wisconsin, and that wasn't anything spectacular in terms of complexity. This was probably a simpler offense than what you saw. You know, if there's anything that might have been even remotely surprising was the number of times they just let, I'm blanking on his name, Leinart, the quarterback.
Who's a big guy, man, 6'5", 237. He's a horse.
I mean, he is a big quarterback. That guy was hard to bring down. Now, he's not fast, but he's hard to bring down. He was the leading rusher in the game. He outrushed Minnesota's running backs. He outdid Amir. But again, you got this quarterback that runs probably a 40-yard dash time that you could time with a calendar, and you still couldn't stop him. The guy still racked up over 100 yards rushing on those bootlegs and quarterback keepers. I don't want to say it's embarrassing, but it blows my mind that we've got a defense that apparently is so ungodly complicated that we can throw one of the most bare-bones basic offenses at it, and guys are still out of position because they're not quite sure exactly what they're supposed to do.
You know, and to compliment Minnesota, isn't the beauty of it the simplicity of it?
It is. And the thing that blows my mind is that it is so hard to get a lot of coaches to buy into that. Now, I think you see some very good coaches out there who buy into that. And I think you're seeing a trend now towards seeing teams go back to this. If you look at the good teams in the Big Ten, Ohio State's maybe a little bit of an outlier, but they've got such an incredible cast of talent. They can afford to do it. But you look at Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan State, those are the teams that are trucking everybody, and they're doing it with a really basic run-based offense, pro-style passing game, and good, solid, basically just a really basic but very, very well-disciplined defenses. You look at the great teams in the Big 12, Oklahoma, Kansas State, they're doing the same thing. When TCU is playing well, they're running the ball well. When Baylor's playing well, they're running the ball well. You look at the Southeastern Conference. I mean, you look at the conference that everybody measures, is the measuring stick for everybody. What do the good teams in the Southeastern Conference look like? Alabama looks like Wisconsin, but with much better athletes. Look at Arkansas right now with Bielema. All of a sudden, he's rattled off 8 straight shutout quarters on defense, and he's just pummeling good SEC teams with that offense. They have finally turned a corner. I mean, you look at this season. He had several losses this year to good SEC teams by anywhere from 1 to 5 points. You knew it was coming with Bielema down at Arkansas. He's got that Wisconsin system down there, and they are going to be something to behold. But even that's not all that surprising when you look at Alabama and LSU and Auburn and Mississippi and Mississippi State. The basics of it are a good, really solid running game with a pro-style passing game and good, solid, again, very well-disciplined defense. There's nothing special about what these teams are doing from a schematic standpoint. Now, there's always going to be some outliers. There's going to be an Ohio State. There's going to be a Florida State. There's going to be an Oregon. There's going to be a Baylor. But when you look at most of the teams that play consistently well week in and week out, don't have some of these, man, how did they lose that game type of losses? And they do it year after year after year. They're running they're just kind of sticking to the basic fundamentals, and that's not what you see happening at Nebraska. Tell me right now, what is give me Tim Beck's offense. How would you categorize it?
All over the place.
That's your answer right there. You ask anybody. Nobody can really put a finger on exactly what his offensive style is. Those kids are asked, I think, to do too many different things, and to do them well, it's too complicated.
I'm telling you, you shouldn't have been a doctor. You should have been an offensive coordinator.
I don't know about that.
I'm
not that smart.
Oh, no, you're very smart. We know that you're very smart.
Well, I'm looking around the country. Tell me what good teams are doing right now. Tell me what the NFL does. What did Chip Kelly do when he went to the Philadelphia Eagles? Did he put this weird-ass spread offense in with the Eagles? No. He went with the pro-style passing offense and a strong ground game.
He might have sped the game up a tad, but he didn't really change. He didn't reinvent the wheel.
No, he put a twist on it, but you know what? You just nailed it on the head there. He didn't reinvent the wheel. He took what worked, put a little twist on it, nothing crazy. It's not like Mouse Davis in the run and shoot reborn here is going to suddenly work. Gimmicky things don't work for the long haul. The Wildcat is a dying offense right now. It's kind of fun for three plays a game, but other than that, you're just not going to see it work.
I mentioned the Remington Trophy presentation. It's coming up January 17th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. And boy, does former Husker Dave Remington get a lineup scheduled for that night. And that's why you're going to want your tickets, you're going to want to get your table, and you want to be part of the festivities by going to RemingtonTrophy.com. Courtney Hall will be the Ford Legends Award recipient. The former San Diego Charger, the former Rice Owl, will be in town to pick up his award. Gunnar Esiason will be the featured speaker. Of course, he's been the face of cystic fibrosis ever since he was a baby and diagnosed with cystic fibrosis. And, of course, Dave Remington, the president of the Boomer Esiason Foundation. And the featured speaker at this year's Remington Trophy presentation is going to be Bobby Bowden, the former Florida State Seminoles head coach, going to be in Lincoln to give what is sure to be an entertaining and insightful keynote speech. It's the Remington Trophy presentation January 17th at the Rococo Theater. Get your tickets now at RemingtonTrophy.com. We've talked a lot about the loyalty of Bo Pelini, not just to his players, but to his assistant coaches as well. After the game yesterday, Rob, he took a bullet for Tim Beck and said he called the play at second and one. Well, he didn't call the play, but he didn't veto the play. And like a good head coach, and it's admirable that the buck stops with the head coach. But let's be honest, Tim Beck made that call, and it was a bad call.
I think it was a bad call. Now, I harped on that one hard on Twitter.
Yeah,
on that second and one is what I assume you're talking about.
Well, the one you said, your daughter said, what would you do on second one? I would run the fucking football right down their throat. I think that was the quote from your daughter.
My 7-year-old didn't really say that. just so people are aware. Just because I put it on Twitter doesn't mean I actually asked my 7-year-old daughter and she responded that way. Here's the thing. It's not baseball. And I said that on Twitter. Baseball and football are different. And I understand that people love that analogy that you've got a 3-0 count. You know, let's take a swing. Worst thing that happens is I pick up one strike, but I got two more here left to go. It's different in football. More bad things can happen in football. It's not the same as baseball. You're sitting at second and one. It is not the same as having a 3-0 count and you got a couple more chances here. And this was a perfect illustration of why. You take a sack. Now it's third and eight and you've got to throw the ball. Then you take another sack. Now you're out of field goal range when you needed some points. When you needed to keep a drive alive to give your defense a rest, and now you're punting the ball away to just an absolute methodical machine of an offense which is what Minnesota's got. They did the same thing to us last year. This is not like Nebraska is sitting here going, geez, I wonder what Minnesota's going to do to us. At that point in the game, Nebraska was reeling a little bit. They had gotten a field goal, but Minnesota was putting points on the board, had pulled to within, well, they had pulled to within, what, 24-21, yeah. I believe, at that point. So they're within three, a touchdown takes the lead, and Nebraska's defense is absolutely gassed. You got to go for the first down. You can't take a shot right there. If that was middle of the first quarter, nothing much was happening, defense is doing okay, and you're sitting there thinking, yeah, let's take a shot. I kind of get it then. I'm still one of those guys where the smart move and the best move is still to go ahead and get the first down. A quarterback sneak gets you the first down. It's and do a quarterback sneak, do a just straight dive up the middle. You're not going to lose any yardage on that. Then you're still sitting at third and one. And you bust through that first line, then you've got open field maybe. But when you drop back to pass, it's different. And it put Nebraska in a horrible spot because now all of a sudden it's not playing to their strengths either. I could be wrong. I think that might have been the first pass they had run in, oh.
Was it 19 plays?
Yeah, I think they had, I mean, they were, Nebraska was pounding the ball down. I mean, it was actually wearing out Minnesota's defense a bit. They had a great drive going by running the ball.
And I'm sure their defensive coordinator said, holy crap, they dropped back to pass. What's going on?
And I'm sure, oh, I bet he was so happy when he saw that. It absolutely killed that drive. It put the ball back in their hands. It put our defense back on the field. It was wrong on multiple levels. This is, like I said, I cannot emphasize that enough. It is not baseball. It is not a 3-0 count. You got a second and one. The number one thing that you got to do in that situation, it's late in the game. The other team has the momentum. Your defense is absolutely exhausted. Your offense has a great drive going. The running game's working. You got a second and one because you got 9 yards on first down. You get the next first down. You keep your offense on the field, and you keep moving the ball like that. Nebraska could have won that game. Nebraska should have won that game. When we took that sack, and all of a sudden we're sitting at third and eight, I remember thinking, if we don't convert this third down and we've got to punt it away, that second and one just became the pivotal play of this game. The whole game turned on that, and we gave the ball back to them and put our exhausted defense back out on the field. I understand Pelini standing up for Beck. I am saying, in my opinion, I am not a coach. I'm not in the locker room. I'm not in those coaches' meetings, but it was the wrong call.
And I think
this is not baseball. It's a different situation, and like I said, it was the time of the game situation. It was the time in the game when it took place, and it was just the fact you got a second and one, you get the first down. Smart coaches don't take a gift and walk away from it.
And I think
we had a gift right there. We had a second and one. It was an easy first down. We walked right away from it. Now here's the thing. Has Nebraska shown its short to medium yardage passing game to be a strength? I'm asking you that question.
No.
What have you seen Nebraska throw to the tight end in the last month and a half?
I don't think they have they?
When have you seen Nebraska throw to the fullback in the last month and a half?
I don't think they have. I've seen
when have you seen Nebraska
I see them go long
throw to the running back out in the flat in the last month and a half.
All I've seen are Hail Marys.
That's my point. Nebraska does not have an effective short to medium yardage passing game. If you're going to throw on a second and one, you need to if you're going to give up that gift of having a second and one, you better have a pretty sound, not great, but at least sound short to medium yardage passing game. Nebraska doesn't have that. I understand you want to take a shot. Great, but guess what? You don't have the tools or the capabilities to take that shot. When have you seen Nebraska effectively passing the ball on a consistent basis over the last 2 months? They haven't. They literally took second and one when their defense was absolutely exhausted and the opponent was absolutely rolling, and they went and played. They said, you know what, let's do what we do worst and take a shot. Now, let's say Nebraska was a mediocre running team and an awesome passing team. I get it. Let's take a shot. Let's do what we do well. Nebraska is not good at passing the ball this year. They're just not. And they did exactly what they did. I mean, they took what they do the worst and tried to take a shot with that. I kind of get it if you pass really, really well, but they don't. It defies all logic. I will listen to any argument that somebody puts out there and says, well, I kind of understand you. You know, it's second and one. You take a shot there. No, you don't. It's not a 3-0 count in baseball. It's totally different. And so I defy anyone to argue against me that was a horrible call, and it was one of the factors that cost Nebraska that game.
Of course, additional support for the Husker Doc Talk podcast brought to you by HuskerMax.com. For great Husker content that's pushed out on a daily basis, go to HuskerMax.com. And our good friends at the Benson Brewery in the heart of Benson, great local brews, a brand new menu to go along with a brand new chef. Check it out. It's the Benson Brewery. So up next, Rob, is the Iowa game, the last regular season game of the year. It means nothing for either team except maybe some bowl position. Is this another game?
Coaches from getting fired.
Well, you know, they're not going to fire Kirk Ferentz because over at Iowa, their expectations are different than what they are at Nebraska. That's a fact. The expectations are different. But my question is Nebraska motivated at all to play this game?
I think they are, because I think they better be. There's a massive amount of pride on the line. And they should feel pressure to play this game and to play it well. When was the last time Nebraska lost to two different teams in the conference in back-to-back years?
Oh, I can't remember. And especially if you were to say those teams were Minnesota and Iowa. You know, yeah.
I shouldn't say that. I'm sure there's probably like a from the Big 12 days, like an Oklahoma, Texas Tech run where they lost to them back-to-back years, especially under Callahan. But I think the motivation should be there. If I was those players, I think the motivation would be there. But again, this game worries me, and it worries me for obvious reasons, one of which is that Iowa's running game has been inconsistent, but they try to have a good ground control running game. They run a pro-style passing game. You know what? They try to play good, solid position assignment-based defense. They don't do anything crazy.
Yeah, and they held Melvin Gordon to 200 yards.
Same boat as Minnesota and Wisconsin. They just might have slightly worse athletes than Minnesota is.
They held Melvin Gordon to 200 yards, so that's half of what Nebraska did. But here's the deal. Both teams lost yesterday. But Iowa, if this sounds correct or intelligent, Iowa's feeling better about its loss than what Nebraska is.
I agree. I thought Iowa played lights out yesterday. I thought they played a very good game. They just came up a little short on the scoreboard. I don't know. You know, you and I traded some messages yesterday about that game in regards to whether who you'd root for, at least for me. And, I mean, part of me wonders, it's like, geez, do you want Iowa to win so they're maybe a little overconfident going into the Nebraska game, or do you want them to lose a close one like they did, because, well, maybe Iowa's a little emotionally spent on a short week here.
It's going to be interesting.
So I don't know. I could see either thing helping Nebraska. I could see Iowa being a little bit wounded where they came out, and I think they really wanted to win that game against Wisconsin. I mean, that's again, it's one of the classic Big Ten rivalry games. They've got a legit trophy. Nobody cares about the Freedom Trophy between Nebraska and Wisconsin, for God's sakes. Wisconsin can keep it for a while, for all I care. But that was I think that was probably a pretty big game in the hearts and minds of the Iowa players, and to play as well as they did, come back from three scores down like they did, and potential and almost win. I think that's got to be a little bit emotionally draining, and I'm hoping that carries over into the Nebraska game for them.
Okay, you know, I would be shocked, though, if one team or another rolled to a victory on Friday. I think it's going to be a close game. It's going to be, to use the cliche, a smash-mouth Big Ten football game.
If Nebraska is able to do, okay, let's take for instance what Nebraska did against both Minnesota and Wisconsin. You come out, you get two or three scores right off the bat. If Nebraska can do that, I don't think Iowa can recover. I think they go in the tank, and I think Nebraska rolls.
But that's the question. Can Nebraska
if that doesn't happen, and if Nebraska doesn't get out there and mount a reasonable lead right off the bat, then I think Iowa is going to do – I think it's going to be a very – not a blowout, but a good, solid win by Iowa.
Let me ask you –
I don't think Nebraska is going to be able to hang a whole game in a close game and pull out a win.
Real quick question before I let you go. If Nebraska loses, Bo Pelini keep his job, yes or no?
I think they keep him for the bowl game, and I think it hinges on that. I think God, it's such a hard one to call, because I think the smart move on an athletic director's part is to come in and tell the guy, listen, you've changed things here from the previous coach. What is it? Nick Saban and Bo Pelini are the only two coaches in the country with nine or more wins every year over the last previous 5 years. Six if Pelini gets one more win this year. The difference, however, though, is just you look at some of those blowouts. You look at the finish to the season. Nebraska, I get losing to Wisconsin. They can be one of those teams that could just truck anybody. But Nebraska should not have lost to Minnesota. Nebraska should be sitting at 9 wins with a chance for 10 right now. And that didn't happen. A smart athletic director is going to look at the situation and say, listen, you're doing solid, but there's things that could be done better. And that's the truth of it. And I think the athletic director in the situation you're talking about comes to Pelini and says, listen, here's the deal. You got to change the coordinators.
And how far does loyalty go?
The wild part here is I think the administration down in Lincoln does not like Pelini. You heard all the hubbub last year about how Perlman wanted to get rid of Pelini, and certain boosters pulled the purse strings a little tight on buying out his contract. I don't know the truth of it all, but the feeling at the end of last year after that Iowa loss was that Perlman wanted Pelini out of there, and there's a few reasons it didn't happen. That's the wild card in it, is I don't think the administration down there is really happy with Pelini. I think the smart move would be to tell you got to get some different people in here. It just anytime you do that as an administrator to a head coach, you're kind of hamstringing your coach and making him a little bit of a lame duck, because you're basically saying, here's a head coach who doesn't run his program like he should be. And so long-term, I don't think that ever fosters a healthy relationship between a head coach and an administration. So if Pelini doesn't decide he's going to make changes himself, then the administration has to tell Pelini to make changes, I don't see there being a long, I don't see Pelini being at Nebraska for the long term going forward from here.
Dr. Rob with the longest one word answer I think we may have ever had. Dr. Rob, it's always a pleasure, always insightful. We'll have more next week as the season comes to an end. Will Nebraska have 9 wins? Will Nebraska have 8 wins? Hell, will Bo Pelini even still be the coach in Nebraska after Black Friday? Those will all be discussions that take place next week on the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.